Hello, everybody, and welcome to eTech Muddy Boots, where we don't just talk about it, we stomp right through it. I'm your host, Melissa, and this is the show that gets down and dirty with everyday leaders who are making real change happen. We're not afraid to get our boots muddy because that's where the real stories are. So lace up, slip them on, step out, and join us as we trudge through the trenches of trust building and action taking, real action taking. If you are tired of all the talk and no walk, you're in the right spot. So let's get your boots ready. Let's lace up. Let's get muddy. Hello and welcome to eTech Muddy Boots. Let me tell you something, what should keep every CEO up at night. What if your number one employee quit tomorrow? Your best employee, your number one employee quit tomorrow, not 6 months from now when you had a plan that didn't tell you, hey, I'm quitting tomorrow and we have a year to plan. I'm just saying, what if your number one producer, the one that you're lean on, your go-to, the one that you can't do without, what if they were not here tomorrow? What do you do? What do you do? Do you have a plan? Not when you groom your replacement, not anything after. Do you have a plan for your next replacement? So welcome to eTech Muddy Boots. That's our topic today, where we don't just pretend to know about the topics. We have guests that actually are living, breathing, and walking in these topics. So I want to introduce to you guys some people today on our podcast, Michael, Patrick, and Mayank. These guys, they're not reading from a script. They're not faking it till they make it. They have walked through the mud. They're walking through the mud. They've been thrown in the mud. They've slipped in the mud. They've stomped in the mud. And it's specifically on this topic of succession planning. So hopefully today, before we close out, you guys will get some great insights of what do you do if in your succession planning? What do you do to plan for it? What is succession planning? So I'd like to welcome these guys to the eTech Muddy Boots podcast. Hello, gentlemen.
Thank you, Melissa.
Oh, thank you.
Hello. So, you know,
hello, Melissa.
Hey, you know, since this is not scripted and that's why people watch, because this is truth, it's real, it's raw, it's not us pretending. We're actually facing these challenges. We got empty seats. We got untapped potential. These are things that people that are listening have the same struggles that we have. So let me start with Mayank. Mayank, what in this topic of succession planning, we're going to link your bio, Patrick, Michael, and Mayank. The team will link the bio so all of our podcasters can go find out all the information about you. But to give them a glimpse about who you are, Mayank, can you start off and tell us what makes you equipped to talk about this subject of succession planning? Why you?
Thank you. Thank you, Melissa. So, When I started with the leadership development team, one of the new projects that I started working on was succession planning for eTech. And it's been 4-5 years now that I've been leading the succession plan initiative for all of eTech. I work with the development team to create the assessments that go into our annual performance evaluation. I work with the directors, AVPs, the C-level executives to work on creating a succession readiness document, a living document that tells us where do we really stand with the capability in our organization? Where do we have empty seats? Where do we have untapped potential? So all of that is something that I really lead at eTech. So yes, I am here to share with everybody the insights that I've had over the last 5 years dealing with succession planning at eTech.
Perfect. Thank you very much. Patrick, I know you're the veteran on the team here. You were successed into eTech before eTech was an eTech. let our podcasters know why you, Pat. Why are you able to talk about this topic?
Yeah, Melissa, thank you for having me, number one. But I think I'm uniquely positioned to have to add to this conversation because I have a really unique story, right? I started as an agent. I've been with eTech for, it'll be 26 years in June. And really throughout my career, I've seen firsthand how succession planning can either help the next thing for my personal career, right? If I'm looking at it from a selfish perspective, but also how potentially it can hinder it, right? Just imagine a scenario where I'm doing really well at my job, and you know, I've had a lot of success over the last, you know, 25 years plus years. But I couldn't move on to the next opportunity until there was someone there to continue on and make sure that the business was going to be able to succeed and move forward. Right. So I think I see how important it is, and not only to develop people that work under you, but also to have a plan to make sure that the business can continue, whether you're there or not. I think, you know, one of the biggest things for me is that I always want to leave where I am better than how I found it, right? And in order to do that, I have to be looking for the next leaders of the future. And so that's where that kind of that tension is like, yeah, preserving what works, and but also allowing fresh perspectives, and sometimes taking a step back and allowing other people to step up and do things that sometimes they may be able to do better than you.
Yeah, that is definitely a unique position. And I love the way you divide your brain there from what you've seen works to some new perspectives. Mr. Amazon, speaking of stepping in the mud, you're sitting in the mud. You're actually sitting in one of our centers where you sit in and day out. So what positions you to talk about this area of succession planning?
So, you know, being with eTech for 17 years now, I mean, I've seen all sorts of things, but, you know, the challenges you get with growth. And, you know, one of the first questions that is always asked, and Patrick, I think you would agree, the first question is asked is who's ready to fill that role? Mm-hmm. Who what's our bench look like? And that's the number one question that is always asked. Even if it's, you know, new programs, or we're trying to mix programs, or if you think about, you know, kind of where we are now with AI and the different directions that we're taking, and coming up with, you know, different departments, and, you know, who's ready to fill those roles, who can do that, you know, and is that, you know, we love to do it internally, but is it externally, and who's best suited for those positions? And it's something that I've just seen, you know, happen so many times in my tenure here at eTech. And I just know the importance of making sure that we're always ready. We're always preparing our field, as Matt likes to say, for whatever's next. And, you know, having a succession plan is utmost importance at all levels, not you know, whether you're a sales coach or right, a director or above. It's just important to make sure that you're always preparing, you know, yourself and your teams for what's coming next.
What a heck of an intro, gentlemen. I think everybody's tuning in. I see them calling their neighbors over. This is about to get, everybody better lace up their boots, their shoes, whatever they got on, because this is about to get real muddy, real quick. Right. We're talking about replacement, succession planning. And so you guys definitely are equipped to be here, and you have a seat at this table, or a spot in this mud puddle, should I say, a spot in this mud puddle. All right. So if we have someone that's out there and they're like, succession planning, is that just a corporate buzzword? Because, you know, we have people that listen from all parts of life, all around the world. So if you're thinking of the word succession planning, give me a phrase or a word or whatever comes to your mind that would help someone understand another language. What is succession planning? Like, if it was rolled to me, I would say building your bench. So what would you say, Mayank?
When I'm not here tomorrow, who can do my job?
When I'm not here tomorrow, who can do my job? Well, that's good. All right, Pat.
I would say the future viability of the organization.
Yeah. Wow. All right, Michael.
Melissa, you took mine. I always use the building the bench. You know, analyzing any sports, basketball. You know, if your stars go down, who's next? Or or if your stars move on, who's there to replace them and build that bench and keep that to be a super team?
That's it. And, you know, corporations that don't talk about this, leadership positions, it doesn't matter if you're a mom and pop shop, if you have a dry cleaning business, if you're listening here, if you're running a church, a pastor that steps down, you know, we talk about that. If you're running a multi-billion dollar corporation, or even in your own families, like, there's going to be a point where we're not in our families, like, right? Like, who's going to, how are we going to pass those values and those attributes on to those that are going to be leading in our name, in our family's name going forward? So let's get to some questions. Are you ready?
We're ready.
All right. Succession planning is often discussed, but not executed well. So Maya, don't get on to everybody yet. What's the challenge on the execution of a great succession plan? We'll just keep going in order to not throw you guys off, maybe. So Mayank, tell me what's the plan to make it execute a succession plan well?
I think it's about the mindset. A lot of times we, as leaders, are very conflicted between what's urgent, your daily numbers, getting things done today, to what's important, you're planning for tomorrow, planning for the next year. And when we get into that whirlwind, we are not able to look at planning for the future. So that's one. The other is the mindset. That's about, you know, a lot of leaders look at succession planning like a spare wheel, a spare tire. It's there in the trunk. You only, and it's often ignored, but you only think about it when there is an emergency. But succession planning is more like a relay race, right? Where you cannot really pass on the baton if you're standing still. You both, you know, the leader and the successor both have to be in the game, running at the same time, where they're really doing their job, and at the same time teaching somebody else how to do that job. Right. So when you change that mindset, it starts working out. And quickly, the third thing that I feel is a lot of leaders feel, you know, if I share what I know with others, I will lose value. But at eTech, I think we've flipped the game. It's more about if I teach three other people how to do my job, I add value to the organization. Mm-hmm. So I think that those are the three key challenges that I feel people have.
Yeah, that's a really, and all those can really lay in the area of mindset. So Patrick, what do you think about that when he talks about the mindset and those areas, and what would be your input?
Yeah, no, and just to kind of build on that, right? Like I used to have conversations about multiplication, right? And because when you think about succession planning and you think about investing in like the future leaders of tomorrow, that requires there's time that you have to invest in that, right? And so a lot of times things are going really well and there's not that urgency around trying to invest that time in the future because things are going well. There's, like Maya kind of mentioned, it's the spare tire sitting in the trunk right now. But I think if people were to understand that multiplying leadership, right? Like I'm only one person. So just imagine I'm 100, right? I'm delivering at 100. I'm an A-plus performer. But if I can take what I know and I can produce three people that produce at 75%, imagine, you know, that's 225 of my 100 now, right? You've multiplied your leadership, right? And what the organization can do when you put forth the effort, right? And it does take more time, right? So just imagine, I know how to do something, can take me 15 minutes and I'm trying to, you know, show someone else how to do that same exact thing. It may take an hour and it may take multiple hours of doing that. So a lot of leaders, they're on the grind and they're, you know, moving at a fast pace. I don't have the time for that. But really, I challenge people to say, if you don't have the time now, in the future, you're going to be trying to find the time when you're between a rock and a hard place and you don't, and it's really, really urgent. And you got to have intentional systems in place. Like it can't just be good intentions. You need to have structured accountability so that when that time comes, because that time will come, it could be through your company is growing at a really fast pace. We've gone through that, right? Where we've got business coming out of the woodwork, where we're trying to figure out like who's going to lead this and who's going to lead this. You can't decide that in the moment, that you've got to have the word that we use all the time, a bench of leaders that we can go select from that are going to help us help lead us into the future and put us in a position to really grow our business in the way that we want to grow our business and take care of our people.
Yeah. Wow. That's powerful. What do you think about that, Michael?
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And I think, you know, like both of these gentlemen said, it's not thought about enough because when things are going well, you don't think about it. And it's not just planning like ahead. It's also thinking about the what ifs. Because a lot of us only think about, you know, if we get new business and there's growth. It's not like what happens if, you know, my leader finds something else and moves on or something, you know, if something happens. Because there's always something can happen. And that's not the first thing that I think a lot of us think about. It's always, I know early on in my career, it was always like, well, I always thought about the new business standpoint. That's all I thought about. I didn't think about, well, if someone got a, you know, another opportunity or, you know, they just decided this wasn't for them, like, and those things weren't, you know, always populating in my head. But now it's, you know, being prepared and preparing yourselves for the what ifs, and not just for the company, but also for yourself and your team around you. It's finding out, you know, what do you guys ultimately want to do. You know, I've had someone that, you know, was in operations that ultimately their goal wasn't to be in operations. And I'm glad I found that out early on in their career, because then I was helped to develop them to do something else. At the same time, also developing someone to replace them in ops so they can ultimately move on to what they wanted to do, you know, long term at the company. So I also think too, it's important to, you know, getting to know your team and finding out what they ultimately want to do also plays a big role in their development. And I think, like Patrick said, you can plan all that out in terms of, you know, what time is going to be needed to develop in those areas. And working out and really scheduling out. A lot of it's really just, you can be very organized and disciplined. It can be a fairly easy process to do, to make sure that you do have a bench in place for you and for the company.
Yeah, you guys are really good at this. You've got some... I'm not trying to say that you're better than I thought you would be. I'm just saying you got some really good insights.
That's what it sounds like.
I'm saying you guys have some really good insights. And, you know, Michael and I talked about, like, the athletic part of it. And Patrick, you brought up, you know, you can't wait until you need them to throw them in the game. This is a curveball question here, but what institutions do y'all think does it well? All over the world, whatever institution, like who do y'all think is like, hey, they're ready, like they know. It doesn't. Ooh. Woody, I know. Ooh. It's a curveball, and that's y'all are shining so bright. I had to do something.
Yeah, bring us back down. Man,
I mean, not that they're perfect at it, but like they play, like they're planning for something to happen, and the person's gotta fill the shoes. What
I think the hospitals, the medical centers,
okay,
because they're always, you know, they always have emergencies going on. They're always planning, like, if this doctor's not available, who's the plan B doctor, plan C doctor available to get the surgeries done? So I think, in my opinion, one would be the hospitals, medical centers. And the other thing that comes to my mind is, you know, family-owned businesses. You know, yeah. the business owner always has this mind on, how do I really ensure that my legacy lives on?
Yeah, I will tell you this. So I go to a church called One Community here in the Plano area, and the pastor really is focused on what he calls passing the baton. He, as a matter of fact, I went and just attended what they call like a core meeting where they invest in like the future leaders. And one of the things that they brought up is, who's your apprentice? Like, if you were to leave this position now, tomorrow or next week, who are you apprenticing so that someone can step in and that we can pass the baton into the future? Because there's eternal impact here, right? And so I think they're getting it. They're doing really, really well at it, because there's this whole process of making sure people are mentored and shepherded, yeah, through the process, so that it's not like if one person leaves, things are going to continue, right? And so it's really investing time. It's making sure that baton is passed properly. So the church that I go to, I think they're doing really well at this.
That's awesome. So the medical institution, the church, what about you, Michael? Anybody that points out to you?
No, this is a tough one. There's nothing that jumps. And I don't know, this isn't quite the same, Melissa, but I think if you look at potentially sports organizations, when they're looking at who they have and what's going to draw, you know, crowds, what's going to, you know, get their fan base excited, I think in a way, even though it's not like they're always looking at what's, you know, if when LeBron James retires,
right?
Now we have Luka. You know, now we have Luka to replace. I know it's not exactly the same, but in a way it is, because they're preparing. They're always looking, yeah, at their stars. Who's going to be here? Who's not going to be here? You know, how can I draw crowds? How can I, you know, keep our fan base happy? So in a way, they are literally keeping their bench. They're always looking at their bench.
Michael, I feel you just poked your finger in my eye, because, you know, I live in Dallas and I'm a big Luka fan and I'm a Mavs fan. I just went to the game last night and, you know, the Lakers stole our best player. But, you know, I won't go down that.
But you guys are, we won't get into that. We won't get into sports fights here. That's on the next Muddy Boots, okay? It'll be all sports, all fights.
All right, but
all three of you are correct. It makes us all think about, you think about what's happening in the background. the conversations, the meetings that are being had in the background are about replacement, or about who's the best, you know, who's going to engage the fan base, who's going to be the next to serve this church. We can't leave, you know, we're supposed to be shepherding these people. One person can't leave and everything fall apart, right? Mm-hmm. We can't have one doctor get sick in the ER and no one can help a gunshot wound. Seriously, mm-hmm. right? So yeah. These conversations are being had intentionally. And it's just, it is like probably the top thing on their list, I would think, in the medical, yeah. in the yeah. pastor, and in the sports. I don't think it's down under three. I think it's one of the most important things on their list. So lesson mm-hmm. one for those listening, if this is an afterthought for your organization or for you, whatever organization you lead, you're already screwed up. Just so you know, I told you it's going to be real tall, real fast, real quick. Like, you better get it together. This cannot be an afterthought. This can't be, if we have enough money, we'll do this. This has got to be probably one of the most important things that you do. So there's a quick a head shake right there, is to get yourself to put it's got to be probably part of every discussion that you're having on what you're doing and why you're doing what you're doing. So I think that's critical. So, you know, ETAC, we're such a unique organization. I was talking to someone about it yesterday. We've got ETS Labs, which is a whole new creation, a whole new adventure for us. And then ETAC's really always been big on developing from within. Patrick, you brought that up, you know, of being here. I look at each one of you on here. So what do you say we should look for when we're identifying potential leaders early on? So, you know, someone looked at you and said, he's got it. He's got it. What is that trait? What's the he got it trait, or she's got it trait, or they've got it trait that we should look at? Michael, I'm going with you first on this one. Throw him off a little bit.
I know you did throw me off. Think, you know, one of the things that always stands out to me, and honestly, it's probably one of the biggest things that my leaders bring to me, are their hunger and their willingness to learn, and their proactiveness to come to the leader and say, hey, I've had agents go to, you know, come to our leaders and say, how do I get into your role? I've had someone ask me, how do I get into my role? So yeah. those types of, you know, what do I need to do to be you? You know, what do I need to do to improve? What do I need to do, you know, to grow within the company? And that's like one of the biggest things that stands out to me. Cause a lot of the times, you know, I think we make that mistake of, you know, sometimes it's like, well, this person they're really good at their job. They perform really well. That doesn't necessarily mean they might just be where they're at. They might be very good at that. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that, but you want to look for something more where they're hungry to learn. They're hungry to further their careers. And they ask proactively a lot of those questions, like, cause you know, by doing that, you know they want it. It's not like I'm coming to you saying, hey, Melissa, I think you would be really, really good at this. And Melissa's like, I'll try it out. And sometimes that does happen. There's been some where I've, you know, come to one of my leaders and said, hey, I think you would be better in this role. And then we have the discussion. But again, it goes back to the follow-up of, do you really want to do that? And they've come, and listen, I really, really want to do that. What do I need to do to? So it's got to be like a really, really genuine interest in wanting to grow and to be, you know, and to learn. I think that's really, for me, that's one of the biggest things too. And then I think secondary is kind of like their overall attitude is, you know, are they outgoing? What do they want to do? They ask a lot of questions, you know, so it's really the attitude and then just that hunger to want to learn and grow and develop themselves.
Yeah. That hunger is a huge thing. I appreciate that, Michael. That's a good one. Pat, what do you think?
Yeah, I think ETAC is really unique in terms of like how we've approached identifying leaders, right? Like my own journey talks, you know, I started entry level. And I think what that does when we are identifying leaders that have started at kind of like that ground level, it creates leaders who, number one, understand the business. So, right, that's the skill part of it. But also the empathy for how hard that job is when you're on the front line and you want people leading well, that, number one, understand and know the job, but also can have an empathy and can connect with people in an authentic way, right? And so to me, like leadership, it reveals how people handle ambiguity, like stuff like setbacks, peer relationships, and not just like how they deal with upper management. And one of the things that I learned just the other day, and this is one of the things that I look at, is I look at three things, right? So number one, skill, right? Are they skilled for the job? Do they have a commitment level, and are they coachable, right? And I was asked to put those in order, right? And when I put them in order, commitment, coachability, and skill. Because if you don't have someone that's committed to the job, that shows up when they're supposed to show up, right, doesn't matter if they have the skill, right? They're just not going to be there and grind it out when things get hard. And you need to have someone that's coachable, because things aren't going to always go right. And when you give them feedback, there needs to be someone that's going to be able to take that feedback, not take it personal, and then turn that around and turn that into changing behavior, right? And then they also have to have the skill, right? So you've got to have all three. But if I were to rank the three of those, I think I would put commitment first, coachability, and then skill. Because I would take someone that has that hunger, like Michael talked about earlier, that has that will to win and they want to win, versus someone that has the skill on the outside, they have the great resume, but really they don't have the hunger. They have the sense of entitlement of, well, I've already got the degree and I've done this and, you know, I should be leading people. I think that's a recipe for disaster when you choose people like that.
Well, that's dangerous. Even if you use that, that is so powerful that you said that. Because think about Mike's example in the medical field, right? We've got skilled doctors, but if they're not committed to me living, if I come in with a gunshot wound and they're like, they're not really committed on, you know, their job, which one, do you really want that person operating on you, right? So I really like the way you rank those. Mike, Mr. Brilliance, that is putting this, our succession for eTech together, what say ye, Mr.?
So I love the points that Michael and Patrick talked about, and they relate to hunger. And that's something that I feel as well is very crucial. You know, when I look for people, if they have the potential leadership traits in them or no, is how they look at problems. Are they only there to complain about problems? Because, you know, in our world, we'll always have some of the other issues going on. And when they look at issues, are they really just talking about and complaining about the issues, or they're talking about the potential solutions that they have? Or if they're not able to think of potential solutions, are they coming and talking to you about brainstorming solutions, or are they just talking about problems? So that aligns with that hunger part, for one. And the other element is for people who are willing to look at the gray areas of leadership. You know, in leadership, not everything is black and white. In fact, most of the things that you deal with are not black and white. They're in the gray area. People who are able to identify those gray areas and you know, you don't want people who, like Patrick mentioned, you don't want people like, you know, come and tell you, hey, this is technically not my job, I'm not touching this, find somebody else. You really want somebody who would be like, you know what, this is what we could do. This is not my department, but this is what we could do, and this is how I could contribute here. When you're hearing those terms, you know that you found your pick.
Yeah. Wow. Here you guys go again, just knocking it out of the park. So I was at a local restaurant yesterday. It's a very small restaurant. The lady there is needing a waitress. Are y'all with me? This really goes to what Mike is saying. And I was like, so how are, you know, I'm all curious. I'm eating my onion rings. Sorry. I know I should be eating like a salad, but I was eating onion rings. And so I'm curious, you know, like Curious George. I was like, did you post for the position? And she said, I put a few feelers out, let people know I was looking for someone. But she said, I watch them when they walk in the door. And then I know if I'm going to interview, I even know if I'm going to interview them. I was like, what do you look at? And she said, if they slide their feet. I was like, what? Just a little. So why do you think if she's looking for a waitress or a waiter, and she said, when they come in to talk to her, if they're sliding their feet, why do you think that was an identifier for her? When y'all are talking about identifiers, why do you think that's an identifier for her in a small restaurant industry?
Urgency. Someone that's going to move with purpose and intentionality. And then also someone that's sliding their feet if they're carrying a tray or something. I'm just thinking off the top of my head, you know, maybe they're going to, you know, trip and, you know, drop it, right? I don't know. It'd be a number of things, but yeah. I think of someone that is intentional about the way that they move through the space.
That comes from my view. Like somebody who has a firm foot, you know, they're there and they're steady, and the body language aligns with how it's supposed to be at a restaurant.
Confidence.
You don't want somebody who's lousy and, you know,
slumped shoulders, things like
that. Slumped shoulders. There's one waitress that works the lunch hour or waiter that works the lunch hour. So they have to do like everything. So it's interesting how you guys are looking at hunger, like their attitude, right? And then leading on what Patrick is saying about, you know, listing out those three things and really their commitment to the job, right? If you can't even look like you're committed in the interview, you're not really, if they don't look good on the date, they're not going to look good to marry. Okay. So I'm just trying to be real, real clear about that. All right. So we got to be really clear about that. And then Mayank puts in, you know, definitely, you know, just the broad perspective of that and how we look at it. Okay. We're wrapping up. I know you've got things, you've got more mud puddles to stomp through, but I want to talk about a kind of a subject I haven't heard people bring up, and it's the truth. They're thinking it. Y'all thought it before. I've thought it before. But when we're going to talk about it here, because we don't shy away from the real muddy topics. Okay. So a lot of people, they don't prepare for succession because they feel like they're going to prepare to lose their own job, or they want to teach someone what they know because they don't want them to know more than they know. Are y'all with me?
Mm-hmm.
So how do you personally balance pride with mentoring someone for the next position and you stepping back? So, Mayank, I'm going to go with you. If you guys don't know, Mayank and I work together. I know Patrick and Michael know that, but our podcasters might not. And Mayank took over the director position and leadership development. So I'm in the mud in this. I'm facing like stepping back and letting Mayank take the lead. So you can talk bad about me here, Mayank, anything you want to say, but how do you balance that pride and stepping back and mentoring someone?
Melissa, you've been a great mentor for me. This question reminds me of something that I just saw recently. We had this kite festival, Uttarayan in India, and there was this father-daughter duo that I could see, like they were on the same terrace, and the father was a pro at flying kites. And now the daughter was entering the teen phase. And now the daughter also wanted to learn how to fly kites. The father had to, you know, teach the daughter how to fly kites. And when the kite was up in the air, everything was fine. The father was, just standing behind the daughter, managing everything, whispering in her ears what to do, how to, you know, fly the kite, how to take the turn, how to all the skills that the father knew he wanted to share with the daughter. And there was this time where the kite was about to sink. And I could see that it was very difficult for the father to, you know, resist not stepping in. But I saw he still did, right? Because he had already taught all the traits of the daughter. And when the kite went, when the kite went down, the father gave instructions on how to bring it back instead of taking it over. Right. And when I saw that and eventually, you know, the kite was back in the air and it was a beautiful picture that I have in my mind right now of them. But what it reminded me of was leadership. Right. We know a lot of traits. And I think, every role that is there, every role that exists has a life cycle. The first is, you know, when you enter, you're a novice. You're trying to learn the role. You're trying to understand what really happens in that role. And then once you learn everything, you become a pro player at it. And I know of a lot of leaders who stop there. Mm-hmm. You'd be a pro player on that role for years. But the important part is to step into that third role, which is being a coach. You have to go out there and multiply people. And the one mindset, and, you know, if I had to summarize this entire part, the one mindset that leaders should carry is you should be replaceable. And I know it goes against having, you know, people talk about job security and all. But if you are not replaceable, you will not have any chances of getting a promotion. You will not have people who will be able to do your job. Only when people are able to do your job will you be able to go out there and do something else, learn more avenues, right? So to summarize, start as a novice, become a pro player, but don't stop there. That is where a lot of leaders go wrong. Become a coach, become replaceable.
Wow. I really like the pro player. People sit in that pro player. Maybe we've done that in our careers, sit in pro player for too long, right? Just set him pro player. Mayank, family is very important to me, like I know it is to each of you gentlemen. and I'm raising two boys. Michael and I have that in common. But I want them to be better than me. If they're not better than me, I don't think I was a good mom. Does that make sense? I want them to handle conflict better than mom did. I want them to be smarter and read better and do math better. My whole heart, I want them to be able to do things better than me, right? So I think if you take that, I think any good parent wants that. Think about the really bad parents that you've seen. They want to keep their kids not knowing as much as they do, not being smarter than they are. And it really suppresses the kid. And that makes for a really, that doesn't elevate the parent. That makes you think less of the parent, right? So I really like that mindset. If we had that at work more, if we had the work more that I want Mayank to be better than me. If he's not, then I'm doing something wrong. Correct. So if we take that mindset, and that was a beautiful story of the kite story. You got the storytelling down. That was beautiful. Patrick, what say you in this element? Because you've been here a long time and you've had to, you've been a superstar in several roles. So what do you think? What is your mindset on this one?
Yeah, just from the human perspective, like if I'm being honest, there's definitely some tension there, right? Like it's that vulnerability of like kind of Mayank mentioned this of becoming like less indispensable in some sense, right? And so to me, you really have to kind of manage your ego, because to me that's a leadership competency. Like how you manage your ego and your emotional IQ around this is really, really important, right? Because you know, ultimately, it's not really about, in my opinion, like letting go. Mayank mentioned this word, and I mentioned it earlier. It's about multiplication, right? So to me, like if you can reframe it and see it from the perspective of like your impact as a leader is really measured by how many leaders you can create and not just what you personally accomplish, then to me, if you look at it from that perspective, you reframe it and you see it from a less selfish perspective, right? It's not about I, but it's about the we, what we do, what we accomplish as a team. So, you know, if I can leave the podcasters and the people listening with anything, it would be, to me, the best leaders create space for successors before they feel comfortable doing so. And this is so hard, right? Like if it's not a little bit scary, you've waited too long, right? So it should feel a little bit uncomfortable and it should push you out of your comfort zone. And honestly, from a personal experience, I found when I'm mentoring people and I'm helping to, I get a lot of energy from that, but it also helps to, you know, you hear that phrase, the iron sharpens iron. It makes me stay on top of what I need to stay on top of because I want to make sure that I get it right for the next generation. So as I'm teaching and as I'm coaching, I'm getting better. Right. And so it's sharpening my skills as well. Right. So it's not just this one way street of I'm pouring out everything into someone else. Many times I do the mentor program, Melissa.
Yeah.
And I tell my mentees all the time at the end that I got probably more out of it than they got out of it from me. Right. I think I'm a pretty decent mentor and a pretty decent coach and leader. But every time, like I always walk away like, man, we are in such great hands for the future. But also, man, they taught me some things on how to look at things differently, right? Because they're looking at it from a different perspective. And so I think if we can approach it from that and really lower our ego when it comes to this, we'll find that we aren't indispensable. And our ability to multiply leadership really makes us indispensable, not our ability to hoard information.
That's it. That's it right there. You know, I'm glad you mentioned we do have a formal mentorship program. And Mayank just added that reverse mentorship from exactly what you're saying, Patrick. Like every time we mentor someone, we learn equally just as much. Michael, I know that you've been recently promoted. You're facing it like you're stomping in this mud right now. You've got to have people ready, you know, for your position that you didn't just do today, right? You've been working with. But I know preparing those people for the position, right? You had to be able to prepare someone so that you could move into the next position. So what's your take on this one? This is not the topic that people talk about when they talk about succession planning. That's why this podcast is different.
It's hard to follow up from what both these guys just said. A lot of the same thoughts that they've had, I've also had. But I think, you know, as a leader in the mindset of your, you know, you want to have a strong team around you. And I think I think early on, I know my career early on, that wasn't always a thought. It was like, I was just consumed with learning everything I could. And I was hungry. I wanted to learn everything. And I'm still learning. I'm not saying I don't anymore, but I'm still learning. But at the same time, you know, now I'm at a point where I'm like, I want to be able to share that with others because everything is vastly changing and the world is changing and how we do business is changing. And I know how I felt, you know, at certain times within the company of not knowing everything I could. And I've had different experience. I know all of us have different experiences where, man, I wish I would have known that, or I wish I could have. So I think it's taking that and saying, the way I learned and the way I've developed was fine, but I know it could be better. And this is what I would want to do if I were in someone else's position. So I want to be able to share that knowledge and build everyone up. So they don't have, you know, some of those things are like, man, I wish I would have learned earlier on my career to do that. Or it took a lot. Some of those learnings, Melissa's, where it's like, man, it took a long time to learn how to respond or, you know, how to address certain situations. Like I want to be able to take that and teach others to be able to do that. And by doing that, developing, you know, those around me, developing a strong bench. And it, like Patrick said, it does energize you because you're, it's great to see that collaboration between others and see the light goes off with them. And also too, I mean, for me as well, it's a learning for me because there's sometimes like in those conversations where I'm like, man, I haven't done that in a while, mm-hmm. or this would be, you know, it would be great if we did this instead. So it's also, I'm not just helping develop others, but they're in a way teaching me because there's things that we're learning. Because even some of the questions they might ask or scenarios they might give me, I'm like, I didn't think about this. What if we did this? And then all of a sudden I'm always finding new things, honestly, by working with others. There's a lot that I've done recently with some of my leaders as this, you know, this is kind of approached with growing in the company of different things that we can do. And, you know, some of those leaders taught me just as much as I taught them about different ways to approach things or visualize things. So it's all big one learning. But I think that the biggest thing as leaders is you're always going to continue to learn, but sharing that knowledge, like it's great to have all that knowledge, but what's the point of it if you can't be able to share it and multiply yourselves and create, you know, strong benches, because that's not just beneficial for them. It's something that I think we all take pride in as we develop other people. And then also for the company of what we're able to do, because it's not just the numbers or the happy clients. It's also, you know, the people that you surround yourself with and the people that you're helping develop to look back and say, you know, I helped. That's almost just as rewarding as saying, hey, we hit all the client KPIs. That's great. But knowing that certain individuals are growing and developing or got promoted or moved here and there, that's even more rewarding to me, knowing that they're able, you know, I was able to be a part of that. Of their journey.
That's it. That changing someone else's life, not just your mm-hmm. own. And you got, this is the real mud puddle. This is what I mean by mud. This is the epitome of muddy boots. So I want everybody listening to lean in.
There's something I would like to add, Melissa.
Yeah.
There's something I would like to add. Based on everything that we talked about this part, something that comes to my mind and you know, probably it is that we have all that we've talked about is if I started at zero, I don't want the next person to start at zero. I want them to start at five, because I have gone from that zero to five, and I want them to have all those skills when they start. And that is how we really help them become better than us. Like you pointed out, Melissa. And if we keep that in mind, that, you know, they don't have to go through the struggles that we did. We found an answer the hard way. Give them that the easy way, so that they can use that same mind space to find solutions to some other difficult problems. And that is how we like accelerate.
That's it. That is exactly what we're talking about. But that is, Patrick mentioned pride and Michael mentioned pride. And the truth is, if we're being vulnerable, like you said, we don't want people to look better than us. We don't want to lose our position. We don't want them to be able, people say, oh my gosh, you know, where did Patrick come from? Melissa, she wasn't very good for 10 years. That's pride. You know what I'm saying? And then, and like you said, Mike, we're like, some of us are like, I had to learn it from scratch. They can learn it from scratch. You know what I'm saying? So I want you to lean in and listen to what I'm saying. This is not a podcast that we can look on cute on the screen, or we can just share how smart we are. Although you all look very cute on the screen. I'm saying
Handsome, handsome.
Handsome, handsome. We're talking about real stuff. If you, those are natural things that we're going to, if you're saying that never goes through my mind, you're lying. That's not true. That's not true. We've all had insecurities, right? But if you're living in that, if you're not bringing someone in at a, you know, like don't let them start at zero, like Mayank said, if you're living in that, if you don't want anyone to look better than you did in a position, if you're not identifying people, like Michael said, it gives you energy to develop in and to make their life better by helping them to move up. If you're not doing that, when you're done, it's done. You have no legacy, right? If you're leading your company, if you're on this podcast and you're leading this company and you don't want anybody to look like better than the boss, that's okay. You won't have a company for very much longer. Don't worry about it. Okay. So I'm not here to throw sunshine on everybody. I'm here to speak the truth. And these guys came in and they spoke the truth. So we're going to stop it right there because pride comes before the fall, right? If you're too prideful to develop and let someone look better than you in the position you had, shame on you, right? But there are things that you can do. And that's that multiplying that Patrick talked about. That's that having someone ready to take the next heart surgery that needs to take the next heart surgery, right? Because that's what we do to build a better community and better companies. And Mayank said it beautifully, solve a problem that was even harder to solve. Does that make sense? There's going to be new problems and new challenges. We don't need to keep solving the same challenges. We need people at 75 instead of our 45. So thank you guys for your time. Thank you for the investment in people you may never see. You may never see some of these people in the podcast, but I appreciate it. And for those of you listening, you know where to find us. You know where we're talking about real stuff in real time with real leaders who didn't just read the book and just regurgitate what they read. They're walking through it. So if you want to come back to the mud anytime, you guys are welcome. We'll see you on the next eTech Muddy Boots. Thanks for your time.